beginning.
It is just the beginning. It's, I feel like it, I'm in that sort of transitions thing, right? About making space for endings.
Yes. I love that you're bringing this up, right? Because we will do a very conscious, intentional ending for this process.
Wouldn't expect any less, sir.
I wanted to give us, I always want to give us a really good ending, because so many of us have had really shit endings. And it's actually, I found a teacher did this for me, a coach that I worked with for a really long time, a supervisor. And the last two sessions that we had together, he was like all about the ending. And I'm like, this is really uncomfortable. And we're talking about endings, and it just makes me want to throw up every time I think about it. And actually, it was so compassionate and really supportive and completely changed the way I see endings. So, yeah, that's taught me a lot about doing this, you know, in a really conscious way. So we'll absolutely have a proper session that's all about the ending. And you're also very true. It's very right, Charlotte, for you to say that it's the beginning as well, right? Because all we're ending is this learning phase. And then we move into the kind of integration implementation phase. So, yeah, it's just a different thing. Hey, Iris, nice to see you. Okay, so fun times ahead. What are we talking about today? I'm going to share my screen. I know what we're talking about today. That was a rhetorical question. Don't worry, I am prepared. So we're at module 9. Of our program, and the last three modules, so conflict that we've looked at in the last couple of weeks, the compass that we're going to spend the next couple of weeks looking at, and then courage-based planning, which is our final module, number 10. These are all about developing healthy self-resources, right? Kind of all about the sort of moving the client from self-doubt and into self-belief and what that actually looks like. So I'm just going to make sure I've got the chat open there. Release the materials. No problem at all, Charlotte. So I think that's a great approach to take sometimes, to not feel like, okay, I'm going in kind of knowing the answers. It's all going to be fine. So What I'm using here is a lot of metaphors. So that's how I tend to make sense of the world, is through metaphor. That really helps me to understand things. So what I'm hoping is that you're kind of on board and play with me around this. Okay. So as we talk about the compass, I'm using a lot of metaphor to share that. We'll just start and look at what we're talking about today. Do a check-in as usual, talk about the aims of this module, and kind of start to really imagine and picture what we mean by this inner compass. We're going to talk about what this looks like for you this week, and then next week more around how to support your clients through this. I wanted to kind of demo some of this work to you, because I think that can really help to bring it to life. So we'll do a bit of coaching today, and then you can take that into your practice pods to play with in more detail as well. So check in. Anything coming out of your integration week, your practice pods around conflict and what's coming up for you there? How's everybody doing? Anything coming up with clients that you wanted to mention? Yeah, Iris.
Yeah, I just wanted to say about, you know, all of the material, and I think we've all said before that it can be overwhelming and you feel like you're behind. And so I also felt that way. And then I just spent a little bit of time reviewing a few things, and one new thing with a client that I hadn't tried before, and I feel quite different now. So I just wanted to share that in case it's going on for anyone us as well, because in my mind it really was this, you have to perfectly review everything again situation. And it was quite nice to realize, oh no, sometimes you just, I'm good at just dipping in and out of workbooks and trying one new thing, or really reading up on that one thing before the session, and that's good enough. So yeah, I guess my experience of integration week was very much a, oh, that's good enough feeling in all sorts of different SBCA ways.
Amazing. Amazing. I think that is such a great thing to hear for anyone who has that perfectionist tendency, maybe, of wanting to get it right and wanting to have all the information in your mind before you do try something. Just keeping that spirit of experimentation with you is so so helpful. And exactly how you describe it, Iris, that's been my experience as well, of just trying things out and seeing what happens. Just for the sake of it. Listen, oh, this feels like it might help my client. Give it a go.
Yeah.
It's the worst that can happen.
Yeah. And it was actually quite nice. I did the belief buster and I was a bit shaky in asking the questions, and the client did sometimes say, I don't know what, like, yeah, what do you want? And it was still okay. And then I just rephrased the question and we made a joke out of it a little bit. And then in the end, I sent him the filled out sheet and it was like really good for him, or really powerful for him. So it was kind of nice to see, oh, I can really stumble and not really understand what I'm asking and it can still get somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. I am hoping that anyone listening to you describe this is going to have that sense of, oh, I'll just try this out, because everything that I've created here has a lot of flexibility and forgiveness built in, right? It's like, all I'm trying to do is say, well, coaching is just conversations and it's asking questions. And sometimes there are really good questions to ask at specific times. And what I'm trying to do is kind of give you a flavor of what those questions are and what's worked for me and for the clients I've worked with. And that, I think, you know, knowing that there is, you don't have to do them in this right order. You know, you can miss something out, you can come back, because we just never know how perfect that's going to be for our client. So yeah, trying stuff out. Perfect. Yeah, Fiona. Thanks, Iris.
I had a really fun trying stuff out experience last week with a peer coach from a previous program that I did, but we still meet weekly. And something was coming up for her around some like money blocks and kind of why she wasn't progressing her business in the way that she wanted to and stuff. So I thought we might meet her protector. But then it transpired through the conversation that she was like, and it's like when I get on stage in front of people, there's just this other me that's there that's like just amazing and so on it and really, you know, on fire and stuff. So not knowing that module 9 was going to have the compass audios, we did meet the protector, but we did meet your speaker.
Nice.
On the fly, just adapted the visualization, and she found it so powerful, and it was really fun just to play with it and sort of, you know, she's a coach as well, so I was like, you know, I haven't ever done this before, I don't know if the adaptation on in the moment will work, so, you know, apologies if it's a bit stumbly around the edges, but it was so good. And she got really into it and met her, this speaker part of her that stands on stages, had a chat with the her that has all these worries about her business. And she really got this message that the speaker part of her had been there all along, like pushing from behind. And it was, oh, it was so good. So, so
love
good.
That so much. Yeah. So, and just to give a bit broader context, which might help, Fiona, is this approach of meeting these parts of ourselves, it comes from voice dialogue as the mm-hmm. kind of methodology. Or the modality of therapy. And it is literally like having quite a contrived and conscious conversation with an aspect of ourselves. And I just literally experimented with this once in a very similar way to what you describe. And, you know, it was I want to, I can do these things in this context, but in this other context, I seem to fall apart. So how could we bring that part of you into this context? And exactly what you describe, it's like there is this sort of underlying wisdom that's playing along underneath all of it. And we know, you know, we know the, we know what's what to do. And sometimes it just takes, you know, someone we trust to kind of hold some space for us to play with that. And it makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Love that question, Charlotte. How did it feel?
Well, so I went into it, I had listened the week before, I had listened to your recording of the Meet the Protector, and I had recorded an audio for a client of the Meet the Protector. So I was getting quite familiar with the text. And I knew that, so I knew sort of the component parts of it, and I knew that there were sort of specific bits where I'd need to flip it from talking about self-doubt and the protector into talking about the speaker in this part that of her that holds the energy for her bigger vision and her message. That was specifically it, like the speaker holds her message, which she finds it quite difficult to be in touch with if she's not working from the speaker part of herself. So it was a little nerve-wracking, but also I just, when in the audio, in the part where it encourages her to sort of get into her breath and to really let go of any tension, I sort of did that in the moment too, to ground myself.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just went for it. And as you said, Sass, it was particularly helpful because she's a really trusted colleague.
Yeah.
So there wasn't really any sense that it would go wrong. And I'd said to her at the beginning, you know, maybe nothing will come of it for you and that's absolutely fine, but let's play with it. So it felt quite a sort of grounded but also quite playful experience.
Love it. I think that's such a great invitation to anyone listening, watching, who's just like, oh, I'm getting ready to try some stuff out. Like you and Iris have just, you know, demonstrated that it's never a right time. Yeah, Charlotte.
Thank you for sharing that feeling. I was just curious, got there. Oh, how did that feel going? And this isn't really related to any of the material or anything, but definitely I had a moment in the last week where something just clicked and I was like, oh, maybe I kind of get what I actually do a bit more now, because I had a really impromptu session with kind of appears she's an NLP trainer, and we both trained in a modality called silent counseling, which is like energy released through breath together. And we were going to just do a little play silent counseling session. And in the moment we were chatting and I was like, would it be more helpful for you to just talk today rather than do this? And we had this like total impromptu session, and she was about to go on holiday, but had this like mountain of work to do. And she just couldn't do it. She couldn't find a way to like understand how she was going to get it done, even with the deadline. And she's ADHD as well. Her daughter, who she was going away with, is autistic and has severe anxiety. And so it was so important to her to be able to have that space with her daughter the next week. But because of that pressure, she wasn't getting anywhere. And she messaged me later on in the day. She was like, I don't know what happened. Like, I managed to get this huge chunk of the work done that I needed to do so I could be in that space with my daughter. And she said, if I hadn't had that conversation with you, that wouldn't have happened. I'd have still been trying to cram it into the 2 days after the holiday.
Yeah.
And been preoccupied the whole time. And I was like, okay, this is like a little nugget of how my work comes into people's lives.
Yeah.
And that was really, like, it felt a really special experience to kind of be part of that. I was like, oh, I've helped someone actually have like quality time with the person that's most important to them.
Yeah.
And it's just like settling in. I think it's this whole like just being a sponge of all this stuff and all these conversations like we're having today that just kind of leads to that. So yeah, it's kind of a personal development as a coach reflection rather than anything.
Yeah, love it. Well, and I would also offer, like, there's a lot of pressure on us as practitioners, right, to have a very solid elevator pitch niche, to be able to say what we do in a succinct and seamless way, right? Mostly because that helps other people to kind of go, oh, I know what you do. I can put you in that box, I suspect. And what I would offer is that, you know, when we're kind of in those first few years of just figuring out what we do, sometimes keeping it really freaking simple can be so helpful. Like, I just help you figure out your life a bit. If there's a place in your life where you're like, oh, it feels a bit murky, I can help you with that. That is priceless to somebody. We just help people, you know, that's what we do as coaches. We help people figure some stuff out. And I think sometimes we can overcomplicate that so much. But as you, and this is the thing, right? It's taken me a while to believe it's priceless to others. The value of that, I think we almost need to experience it for ourselves, like to try some stuff out, get the feedback, and so we can integrate it, and it adds up over time. So it's not something that we question. So we go, oh yeah, there's huge value in this work. Sometimes, I mean, it's just ourselves that's been helped by coaching. When, you know, you go through your training and you meet people and you start having these kinds of conversations, you're like, whoa, this is amazing. This is the secret to adulting, man. Everyone should know this stuff, right? But it's almost like, oh, is it, or is it a cult, right? Because I remember having that conversation, you know, with myself when I first started this work. But I think it's exactly what you're describing, trying some stuff out, seeing what the feedback is from the clients, building that into, oh, this is the area that I really love to work in. But up until the point where you're like, this is what I love, you're just helping people. It's really valuable. Iris, did I see your little hand go up? Please go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of have a question. I'm not exactly sure what my question is, but it's about counselling and coaching, because some of my clients in the past have said, oh, the lines are almost blurred, like this sometimes feels like counselling, which I don't really mind, but I don't know if it, I think in that context it was because it wasn't meeting the expectations of, oh, we do all the productivity results right now. So I was just kind of wondering about that a bit, because especially with SBCA, it feels like there's tools to do very deep work and to touch on some very hurtful stuff, and it does feel quite safe, you know, like the whole trauma-informed thing, and not like, it does feel safe and not like therapy, although I also do think in many ways it does feel like therapy from what I experienced in my degree, like going into an internship. I wouldn't say there's a massive difference in how we talk to people. Yeah. But there was just, I just had this confusion come up because someone said to me, like, something that actually hurt quite a bit. Someone said recently that, oh, it's lucky you're a coach, not a counselor, because sometimes you say very hurtful things as a human, not as a coach, because this wasn't a one-on-one, like, normal life relationship. And I was just, and then later on they explained, oh, it's because you're so action oriented, and that's coaching, right? It's always about action and doing something. And so I was just kind of wondering about counseling versus coaching versus being a human, like all those things, and how to hold all of them together, or is there something we need to do to make sure our coaching is clean and not counseling? I don't know.
I honestly don't know the complete answer to this. It's something that I've sat with for a decade, and I don't think there are clean boundaries. What I would offer is that our job as humans isn't to try and manage other people's perceptions of us. So it sounds like you're this person in your life has a perception of you that you may or may not agree with.
Yeah, true.
Right? Like, it's like you say hurtful things and you're like, oh, sometimes I do, but I try not to. is there a specific thing I said that hurt you? Like we can kind of figure that out. But I guess when it comes to this work, I think it's all about expectation setting with our clients. So I've done this kind of work and quite deep work with folks who would never sign up for counselling or therapy, but have said, this is what I imagine that is like. So, you know, the kind of big ballsy guys in the finance sector that were referred to me by people who wanted to manage them out, right? And you're like, oh, great. But these are people that perhaps have quite a lot of self-belief, but it's misdirected, you know. It's all emotional armor. Mm-hmm. And so our work is very much about kind of allowing them to be a bit more vulnerable and a bit softer and really changing their view of what masculinity looks and feels like, that identity piece. But I take the same approach with that kind of client as I would with, you know, a self-employed woman business owner who's got a ton of self-doubt around showing up and being visible. It's like, we're going to look at why you're not doing the things you want to do. What feels dissatisfying to you in your life? We'll look at the root causes of that. And it means that we're going to look at your whole life.
Yeah.
So it's going to, you know, and it's going to go into, you know, the really good reasons, the root causes of your self-doubt in whatever way that's showing up for you now, whatever way that feels really alive and relevant for you now, it'll be connected to something from back in your, probably your childhood, but maybe just in your teenage years, your younger years, and we'll figure that out together. So yeah, it's going to be a bit emotional sometimes.
Yeah, that really helps. I think, yeah. Yeah, I think for my clients, I kind of just have to phrase it as, we're also pragmatic still, but we'll look at the deeper stuff. And
absolutely.
Then
it's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it comes back to that thing of, most of us know what we need to do. Like, your clients know, I need to be more productive. Mm-hmm. I need to actually have a good routine. I need these things. What they don't usually know is, why am I not able to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, why it felt like a bit messy with that past client was because before SBCA, I think I kind of had this general coaching is always useful thing. And so we would sometimes steer off topic quite a bit and touch on things that would still be like useful, deep conversations for the client, but they weren't really related to our topic, or it was more like a surprise thing that came up. And sometimes that's good, but it feels like I also wasn't confident to just stay on topic, if that makes sense. I would open up all sorts of things. Yeah. And now with the whole entanglement stuff, I think that would, I don't know, it would all have a clearer container. And I think that might have been what was missing with that person, that made it feel like, I'm not really sure what we're doing anymore. Like, is it counseling? Is it coaching? What are we up to?
Exactly. And I think people will show up and just kind of start talking sometimes. Maybe because they're a bit nervous, or they're not quite sure what's expected or how to do this, you know. And so for us to kind of hold space for them, it's like, what are we talking about today? What feels like something that I can help you with today, or something you want to figure out together today? You know, and knowing that we've set this container at the start of our coaching relationship to look at the sort of wider arc of what they want to do, what they want to change. And then each session, it's like, okay, what's on top for you right now? And we're always thinking about that wider arc. Where is this client going, right? Because you will also get clients who will say things like, I really want to be super productive, but actually all of the topics they're bringing to coaching are about the relationship with their friend or their mother or what. And it's like, how's, you know, I'm noticing that we're starting to talk about things that, that may or may not be related to this wider goal of productivity. Do we need to change the goal, or is there something about the goal that you want to revisit? Like, it's a sort of like, let's talk about what we're talking about conversation.
Yeah. Which is a less like a non-entangled way of doing it, instead of going, oh no, am I going to fail if we change the coaching topic, which I think is something that was going on in my mind, that, yeah, just to say what is happening.
And what I have found is that people will book coaching thinking, well, this is a nice clean topic for me to take to coaching. Yeah, Fiona's nodding, this has happened to you too, I'm sure, right? This is a nice clean, you know, acceptable topic to bring to coaching, right? And then you peel back a tiny layer and there's this hot mess underneath and it's like, oh, that's really what you want to talk about. And then you get, as the coach, you get to decide, is this in my wheelhouse? Or is there something that I can refer you to someone else for? You know, and it's all about what does the client need? What's the best way to support the client? Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds great. Thank you. Amazing. That really helps.
Great questions, guys. Love it so much. Okay, so let's start talking a little bit about our healthy adult self and these compass resources. So what you'll notice is that the coaching model resembles a compass. So hopefully that metaphor isn't too much of a surprise to anybody, right? We've got this kind of like the compass rose in the middle of the healthy adult self, and it can go in any direction, right? It can go up north to self-belief, west to self-acceptance, or east, south to self-worth, or east to self-trust. Like the healthy adult self is there to sort of coordinate these inner resources depending on what's required in the moment for the client, right? So this is what we're doing, is when a client is coming to us with their dilemma, their challenge, their current thing that's on top for them, we're looking at, okay, where does this live? Like what would support the client at this time? And sometimes, you know, you're going to spend a lot of time, like for example, a client that is giving away a lot of their energy, a lot of their, their time, a lot of their, their gifts, they're giving those away to other people because they have a really strong martyr. We're probably going to spend quite a lot of time helping them to cultivate this warrior energy of self-worth, really good boundaries, taking up their own space, figuring that out, right? When you've got someone who's got a really strong scapegoat, you know, someone who's like, oh, it's so freaking hard, I just want to quit, we're probably going to spend a lot of time over here in self-trust, helping them to make decisions and use their discernment, take action from a place of, you know, really thinking about where am I going here? What's the decision I'm making? Making that really conscious. And if you've got someone who's got a really strong bystander, right, I've got to wait till I know more. I can't take any steps until everything's in the right spot. We're probably going to spend a lot of time helping them develop some self-belief. What's the vision here, right? Like, how do you lead yourself towards what you want to create? And if they've got a really strong critic, right, someone who is in this space of constantly, like, overproducing, overworking because they're trying to be enough, right, to get the validation, get the accolades, all of that jazz, we're probably going to spend a bit of time helping them cultivate this lover energy of self-acceptance, right? Because that's all about, you know, taking care of yourself with compassion, acknowledging that you have needs and emotions and that you need to belong to yourself before you're looking elsewhere to get that validation. So that can just be a super helpful way of thinking about, okay, if someone's showing up with this kind of protector, where am I going in that compass to help them cultivate a resource that's really going to support them? Does that make sense? Mind blown, Fiona. Okay, cool.
I didn't realize that it was, for some reason I'd assumed it was really literal, like if they had a martyr, then we were working with developing the lover, rather than realizing that it was actually the next point round that we were developing the resources from.
You've always got choices, right?
But it makes so much sense, because actually for people who are struggling with the decision, I'm always like, okay, well, what's the big vision? So Of course it makes sense. Yeah. I just,
yeah.
I've never, well, my brilliant. Brain just rewired a little bit.
Thank I'm you. So glad. Yeah, I'm so glad. And I think this is the thing is that, and we'll come on to talk about, you know, how we approach this, but I think that can just, that's like a real kind of thing that I've been thinking about quite a lot over the last year or so since I developed the protector model, is actually the way out can sometimes be slightly, you know, a slight move around the compass. That can sometimes be more helpful. And certainly when I was coming up with the experiments for those different protectors, that's where I was coming from there. So yeah, I'm glad that helps, Fiona. And it sounds like you're intuitively picking up, oh, that actually really helps. Yeah, brilliant. So just thinking about, you know, how do we do this? Because this is a complex model. There is no two ways about it. And we've spent 6 months kind of looking at this, and we're all still kind of, you know, figuring stuff out. And what we don't want to do, I think, is spend a lot of time teaching our clients how to think. Like, it's almost like, let's show them. And then, you know, as they're putting it together, we can spend some time teaching if that feels useful. But you could get through a very long coaching engagement and never show a client this picture, and they would still figure it out. They would still figure out what's going on. So here's the thing that we want to think about with a client's compass, just a few things to be aware of. We unconditionally believe in the client's healthy self. So everyone's got a healthy adult self, even if it feels quite far away from their lived experience in this moment. We believe in the client's ability to cultivate those resources of self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. Like, it's like, this is just a thing that you're unpracticed at, right? If you've got no self-worth, it's just because no one's showed you that that matters. No one's explained how to get it, and it's a new thing for you. It just means you're unpracticed at it. Doesn't mean you haven't got it, right? And as soon as you start playing with it, you can change that story. So clients may not see these qualities in themselves, or they may have glimpses of some of them. Some of them are like, yeah, I totally have got my vision sorted. I'm big on the self-belief, but the execution, that's a mess, right? So for some of us, we have, you know, quite well-developed aspects of our compass. But it doesn't really matter how well-developed our qualities, those compass qualities are. These tools can support them. And I've worked with people who are, like, you know, kind of, you would look at them and think, you've got your shit together, right? You're not at this end of self-doubt. You've already got a shit ton of these healthy adult self qualities. And in which case, the coaching is very much about their growth edges, right? So how do you take your great life and make it better? What do you want more of, different, you know, what isn't working? Or how do we use these tools to support you to expand your self-concept in a way that matters to you? Right, which is, I think, one of the really powerful aspects of this work, is that, you know, self-doubt doesn't magically go away. Even when you've got really well-developed healthy self resources, that life is not magically free of self-doubt, right? The world's still going to throw stuff at you, you know, everything from structural inequity to, you know, Aaron and sales snide comments at a meeting. Something is going to throw you off kilter, in which case, what do you want to do? How do you want to take care of yourself in that? So for us, and the aims of this module, is that we want to support our clients to kind of feel these three things, right? Reassured that their self-doubt's never created in a vacuum. There's always a good reason for it, right? So that's that sting of judgment from Aaron in sales, that sense of, this isn't right, this is off. We know that there is a really good reason for that. It's also, we want to help our clients to feel that they can reflect, right? That they can make sense of their own experience. And sessions are, coaching sessions are so great for this, because we can kind of pull apart their challenges or what's going on for them, and help them to make meaning in a way that really supports them. And importantly, we want them to feel resourced, right? That they can lean into their healthy self to take the next step. It might not necessarily be about taking action, right? It could just be about feeling into something, right? To make sense of it, to process it, all of that stuff. Is that kind of making sense? Yeah. So when it comes to the healthy self, when you've got a kind of well-developed or a developing healthy self, the client believes that they are creative and resourced, and they have access to their healthy self. Right? So I can figure this out, is basically what you would hear a client say. They're able to access these helpful parts of them, their self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. They're able to just, you know, use those concepts as resources, no matter what's happening to them in their lives. And we show them how to access that, those parts, how to see that they always have a choice, right? Whatever is going on outside of them, they don't need to kind of control the world to feel okay. They don't need the world to change to feel okay. So you see a lot of people... I always think Instagram is such an interesting microcosm of the world, because you see a lot of folks who are like, well, that really triggered me, or I'm super offended by that. And it's like, either you as an individual go, I wonder why that has left me feeling activated in some negative way, and I work to figure that out and make a decision about what I want to do about it, or how I want to, you know, how I can feel it through it. Because sometimes we're like, yeah, that was really offensive. Ugh, good decision. That's information about that person. I kind of know something about them now. Right. But what I'm seeing a lot of is, I'm offended, you need to change. And what that looks like is panic to me. Right? It's like a person who is saying, I have no resources to be able to support myself, so I need you to take responsibility for how you've made me feel. And to me, that is like a path to, you know, really, I don't know, it feels really off to me. It's like, I think actually, even though there are like obviously structural and systemic problems in our world, challenges in our world that make lots of people's lives iniquitous, and it's unfair to put the responsibility onto other people of how we're going to feel. It just robs us of our own sovereignty. It robs us of our ability to figure this out for ourselves. And it seems to me that, you know, a critical mass of people that have access to their healthy self resources will be the best source of rebellion against these systemic barriers, because we will be rising to the top. So we want to help the clients see that they're always in choice. They get to decide how they're going to interpret and respond to their world, to their lives. This means that we are supporting our clients to expand their self-concept, right? They're growing their awareness of their survival strategies and their protective beliefs and behaviors, right? We help them to, you know, to make sense of their sensitivities to different risks. It's like, oh, you're assuming that you can't handle this, right? That's the assumption. Self-doubt says you can't handle this, so you need to hold yourself back. When they've got access to their healthy self resources, like, no matter what happens, I'm going to have my own back. No matter what happens, I'm going to take care of me. So it means that as we support our clients to access their healthy self, that starts to take over as the automatic response, right? So self-doubt is in a, you know, kind of, as you're probably putting together, self-doubt is basically just a mental shortcut, right? This risk is something I can't handle, therefore hold myself back. And what we're doing is changing those mental shortcuts so that it's like, oh, this risk is, we're sensitive to this risk. Oh, I can interrupt that with something helpful. I can see this more in a more helpful way. Takes me straight out of that self-doubt loop. So I don't get into the kind of shadowy comforts and the resistance and deciding, well, that's who I am forever. I get to interrupt that story at the source. And when our clients can kind of get into that habit, right? We teach them these tools. We help them to make sense of their experience. It's not about convincing them that they've got to think a different way. It's saying, what else is true about this that is more helpful for you to believe? What else is true about this that's more helpful for you to believe? You're in choice about how you, if you choose that. Yeah. So what ends up happening, and what I think is just a helpful way of envisioning this, is that our healthy self-resources, so our self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust, they're all, at any given time, they're all kind of under-expressed or over-expressed, right? For us, for most of our clients. And we want to think of that as like a spectrum, right? And then, you know, we're kind of aiming to have our clients sit in the middle, you know, and grow from there. So when it's overexpressed, it's usually in a place of feeling like we're too much. And when it's underexpressed, we're not enough, right? And what we want to do is help our clients to kind of sit in the middle somewhere and grow those resources. Yeah. Okay, I just want to pause there and just check in, see how that's landing for you, what you're thinking. Please unmute yourself.
I have a question about that last slide with the underexpressed and overexpressed. Underexpressed means we feel like we're not enough. Overexpressed, we feel like we're too much. Can you maybe say more about what, I can kind of imagine what an underexpressed healthy outer self looks like, but what does overexpressed mean in this context?
Okay, cool. So let me share this, because it's quite helpful to explain. So each of these four resources can show up for the client in an underexpressed way or an overexpressed way. So if we think about self-worth, underexpressed self-worth tends to look like not being able to take action, not really wanting to take up a lot of space, and not having a lot of boundaries. So it's sort of like we feel like we're being walked all over. There's not usually a lot of, you know, advocacy, self-advocacy going on, right? And self-worth is very earthy. So each of these are, I think, kind of connected to elements as well. And for self-worth, it's the earth, because it's very much about here are my lines in the sand, right? And it's taking action. So that warrior energy is very much about kind of plodding along, right? We're taking the action. We're doing what's necessary. And we're doing that on behalf of the sovereign, on behalf of self-belief, because that's what sets the vision. That tells us what the action is. We're doing it on behalf of self-acceptance, because that tells us, you know, how to belong to ourselves and take care of ourselves while we're taking action. And we're doing it on behalf of self-trust, the sage, because that tells us, you know, that this is the right action to take, right? This is the way to go right now. So all of these resources have relationships with each other. It works like a system in much the same way as the protectors. When that warrior is underexpressed, you've got very few boundaries, Not a lot of action or advocacy taking place, not a lot of space being taken up. Kind of like, oh, I'm not really sure where to put my feet in the world, right? When that warrior is overexpressed, it's like the boundaries become really high walls and very rigid, right? And that's when we're trying to almost control other people. Often when that warrior is overexpressed, there's a lot of anger attached to it, right? Because the thing about advocacy is that it's that clarity, that directness. When it gets overexpressed, it can turn into anger. That's kind of untrammeled, right? It's not in any way directed. It's just sort of like, this is it. I've lost it now, right? Because we've had no safe way to express it. And it can sometimes mean that we just take up a lot of space, right? We almost kind of go overboard in the space we take up, and we can take up other people's space as well because we demand so much of them. Yeah. And that underexpression and overexpression works for all of them. All right, so it just shows up in slightly different ways.
Okay, so could someone with an overexpressed self-worth where they have the boundaries and the anger and take up a lot of space, that could still mean that they actually have low self-worth? It's just different coping strategies, like right. I take up all the space or I take up no space.
Exactly right. Exactly okay. Right. And that's what we're talking about with both of them are absolutely survivor strategies. Right, so someone who doesn't have a lot of space, I always think about people who don't really listen. Right, if you've ever had a conversation with a colleague or someone who just talks over everybody, right? And I always think, oh, I wonder why you do that. Like, are you aware that a conversation is two-way? Or is it that no one listens to you in other places in your life? So you've found that to be heard, to take up that space, that's the survivor strategy that you need to use. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So when you have a chance to have a look in the workbook, what you'll find is that there are kind of examples and more detail around how these things show up in under and over expressed ways. But the idea here is that we're kind of looking for either or in our client, right? That helps us to get a sense of just where they're at, right? And we can ask clarification questions around this too. But the idea is that you have a sense of where is your client? And where are you in this too, right? Because when we get to, when we have under or over expressed resources, healthy self resources, it can mean that that's a ripe area for our own entanglement with clients. I always think anger is a really kind of good example to use because most of us have kind of interesting relationship with our own anger and with that in other people. So if you feel that when you get a client who comes in and needs to let rip, right, because that's a healthy response, or you can feel that they are suppressing it, we'll get entangled with that. Just as an example. Yeah. Anyone else got any questions or anything I can help clarify with this? All sounding all right? Okay. So I wanted to get a sense of help you to get a sense of where you're at right now. Just with a couple of reflection questions, and then we can maybe do some coaching on what's going on. So I want you to think about this from the perspective of you as a human. So think about you're a coach, you're a person, you have friendships and relationships and clients and all sorts, right? So think about your whole life with this now. And I want you to just write down a couple of bullet points on kind of current challenges in your life, right? It may be specific relationships or an aspect of a specific relationship. It may be an area of your business, something in your life. And just jot down a couple of bullet points. And once you've got a couple of challenges, the reflections to have are, I wish I was able to. So what do you want to do to change this thing, this situation? And the reason this is a challenge. So what do you wish was different and why is this a challenge? Just going to give you a couple of minutes to write, and I'm going to deal with the cat who's scratching at the door. We'll be back in a sec. Okay, everybody got a couple of challenges, some notes on what you wish you wanted to change and why this is a challenge. Who wants to volunteer for some coaching? Yeah, Fiona, love it. Love that. Love that. Love that hesitating hand up. Yeah, beautiful. Cool. I'm just going to grab my whiteboard. Oops. Maybe I'm not gonna grip my wallet. Okay. I'm gonna figure this out. Tell us about your challenge, Fiona.
Okay. The challenge is that I'm going on holiday in October with my mum and my daughter. And my mum has lots of opinions and reactions to my parenting and my daughter's behaviour. And what I sort of want to be able to do is tell her to bugger off, like grow up or bugger off, basically, is the sort of my first instinct. What makes it challenging is that feels very disrespectful, which is really against my values. And that actually is so, it feels very complex.
Right.
And actually, I feel like I've traveled a long way in relation to this relationship and my sort of instinctive reactions for how to deal with my mum.
Yeah.
I'm just now worried about the intensity of a week together.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious to know, like, when you think about the compass, your compass, where does this feel like it sits for you? What is it you need more of, do you think?
Like all over?
Yeah.
I think it's about I think it's a feels like it's a conflict between my level of certainty about my parenting. I feel very comfortable with that. I feel like I spend a lot of time in my healthy adult self about that.
Yeah.
My relationship with my mum, and it's, as I said, it's been moving, or like my side of it has been moving. But I think what I've historically done is been in the martyr space a lot,
right,
around attending to her needs,
yeah,
rather than necessarily my own. And so now I feel kind of trapped in this concept of being on holiday with my daughter, whose needs I know I need to meet. And, you know, she's four. And my mum, who I have historically spent a lot of time meeting her needs, and actually sort of going, okay, but now how do I fit my needs into this dynamic?
Yeah. I'm hearing that. It sounds like you've created some kind of almost like unconscious patterns with your mum about how you show up in that relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, counselling and actually some really helpful work with Nicola a few weeks ago has really helped to kind of bring some more of that into my consciousness.
Yeah, cool.
So now I'm at the point of feeling like I can choose something different, but not knowing what that is yet.
Love it. So you said, what I want to do is to say grow up and bugger off. Yeah. So what if you could say that, but in a way that did feel okay to you?
That would be amazing.
Because that sounds like a boundary to me.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So, and I just want you to notice that, like, when we're in the martyr, we're in that place of taking care of everyone else.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't sound like you're going to have much of a holiday if you show up in that way
mm-hmm.
that you've always done. So ready to try something different, freaking love it. And so part of that is maybe activating that kind of warrior energy of, well, these are the lines of that.
Yeah.
So what if we did that? What if we came up with some lines in the sand for you on holiday?
Amazing.
Okay. So what's feeling important to you? I'm just going to get us a blank sheet of paper and share that so we can see it all together. Sorry, just give me 1 second. Here we go. Ta-da. Here we go. Fiona's holiday boundaries. Boom. So whereabouts are you going?
I can't remember. She's booked it. One of the Mallorca or Menorca. I can't remember. One of those.
Okay. So Spain.
Yes. Let's call it Spain.
Okay, cool. And, like, what are your intentions for this holiday? Like, when you picture yourself there, how do you want to feel? What matters to you about this holiday?
I want to feel relaxed mm-hmm. and I want us all to have a nice time.
Mm-hmm. What does a nice time look like for you? Is it like talk me through a typical day with everyone's having a nice time?
Yeah, so it's spending a bit of time doing things that each of us enjoys. So probably spending some time pottering around on the beach, some time probably having quite an extensive nap.
Yeah.
Maybe a trip into town.
Yeah.
Have a wander around and look at some of the architecture and things like that. Nice, easy dinner.
Yeah.
Probably, I imagine my daughter and I might go to the sort of in-house entertainment-y bit and my mum might not, and that would be fine. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a good day on holiday.
Cool. And so is there a spoken understanding that this is the kind of holiday that you want? Like, have you said this to your mum?
Probably, I haven't outlined the ideal day in that sort of way, but right. I have set it up that it's that I want it to be relaxing and easy in, because I sort of said, did she want to come on holiday with us? And then she said, oh, well, I've got loads of time, so let me do the research and book something. Okay. And I said, okay, but I need it to be really easy. I need there to be like a kid's pool. I need close to the beach and stuff. So I've set the requirements for what I needed it to include.
Yeah.
Haven't then taken that further into kind of perfect. Actually, what will we do?
Yeah. So when you think about mum's opinions on parenting, mm-hmm. which sounds like that's the main sort of source of tension, when does that come up? What are the typical scenarios for that?
It comes up any time that Isla, my daughter, has an emotional reaction to anything.
Right.
And it's where I feel like it's where my sort of advocate tendencies came from, as well as my mum's inability to be with other people's strong emotions.
Right.
And so I've had some initial conversations with her relatively recently about sort of trying to be clear with her that actually it's really important to me that all of Isla's emotions are welcome. But my mum really struggles to tolerate it. Even if, like, I don't know, when Isla was a couple of years younger, she like ran into the corner of a table. And so she was injured and crying. And then my mum was also sitting at the table sobbing because she just couldn't tolerate
right.
that emotional sort of reaction.
Okay. So, well, while you're on holiday, what is it that is probably going to be the thing that gets Isla emotional, or just being a human, as we would call it?
Yeah, things like not being allowed the second or third ice cream of the day.
Okay.
Or, yeah, like her, it's often around her reaction to boundaries, but when she's particularly tired or hungry,
yeah.
you know, in a sort of yeah. normal four-year-old way.
Yeah, tired and hungry. Perfect. I feel like Isla is my spirit animal.
Oh, she's totally wicked. She's amazing.
That is exactly the reason that I have tantrums as well.
Yeah, me too.
So, I love it so much. So notice how what we're doing is kind of, we're looking at the big picture, right, of this mm-hmm. beautiful holiday that you've generously offered to go on with your mum. You've invited her in, and now we're getting into, okay, and so what do we want that holiday to look and feel like? So we're mm-hmm. kind of in that sovereign place of like, what's the vision for it? Mm-hmm. And then coming into like, what's likely to create this scenario that is, mm-hmm. you know, undesirable, the thing that we don't really want, which is mum having opinions on Isla's emotional response to the world. Mm-hmm. So when you think about those moments where you've said, no, you can't have your fourth ice cream, sorry, love, let's not do that. Talk me through what's likely to happen.
So Isla Isla's quite likely to cross arms and stamp foot. And right. particularly around my mum, she can sort of regress, so she stops using full sentences.
Yeah. Yep.
And she goes into sort of baby mode. Or she might just full on tantrum, the screaming and the crying.
Okay.
My mum is likely to then, things she's done before have been things like chip in to Isla and say things like, if you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. Or right. give some sort of ultimatum about consequences, like, well, if you don't stop crying, or if you stamp your foot like that, then there'll be no ice cream at all tomorrow.
Right.
Which I find really difficult because I have no intention of honouring her imposed boundary.
Yes. Yeah. So that will, won't be enforced.
Yeah.
And when mum does that, what do you do? What's the typical kind of response from you?
I think I sort of, when it's happened in the past, have just kind of tried to block her out, because it's like, I just shut it down and I'm like, okay, I've got to deal with Isla.
Yeah.
I can't really deal with this random ultimatum giving. So I'll try to take Isla somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that we can sort of work through that side of the conversation.
Yeah. Resolve and kind of reassure, repair stuff.
Yeah.
Good. So it sounds like, and tell me where I'm wrong, but it sounds like when mum pipes up, it's like, now you've got two toddlers.
Yeah.
Both upset, and you have to step into being a parent to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. When mum is talking and offering these ultimatums, what is your, I've got someone joining. What is your feeling state at this point?
Pretty stressed, like my system's quite activated.
Yeah. And I find it interesting, I'm just thinking back to what you said, I want mum to grow up or bugger off. So what's that feeling for you?
It's defensive. I feel really defensive, and like I have to I feel like I need to defend me and Isla.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, if there's a sense of being unsupported.
Yeah. I just am like, this is so unhelpful right now. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're unsupported. It's unhelpful. And almost like you're let down by her. Like, there's a kind of parental betrayal that's going on.
And I think it sort of triggers a whole bunch of stuff about my childhood sense of letdown and betrayal.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like a mirror. I imagine this is not the first time mum's reacted to big emotions in this way.
Yeah.
So am I right in thinking that the defensiveness comes from almost like you're now, not only are you dealing with two toddlers, but you're also trying to take care of your little self and your daughter because of your mum's response?
Yeah, it's like I've actually got three children to deal with. There's my child and both of them.
Yeah.
My inner child, yeah.
Beautiful. So this is such an evocative scene that we're witnessing right now, when Isla just wants a bloody ice cream and you've got three kids you're trying to now manage, right? And doesn't it make total sense that you would be blocking mum out, taking Isla away?
Yeah.
So the thing is, right, if that feels like the best way to respond, that can be the way you respond.
Yeah.
Is there another way you want to respond? Is there another way you could kind of show up to this that would feel better to you, healthier to you?
think maybe this, I think what I'd like to do is to sort of set some ground rules in advance,
yeah,
knowing that it's likely to come up at some yeah. point in the week.
Yeah. And what would they be? What would you like to say to your mum?
Kind of a more friendly version of grow up or bugger off. You know, like if you're finding it difficult to tolerate either's behavior in the moment, know that I'm okay with it and I can deal with it, and if you need to go somewhere else to get some distance, please do that. If you want to stay, it would be really helpful if you would support me instead of giving these ultimatums that actually I'm not going to follow through on. And that if she tried to follow through on, I would block very actively.
Beautiful. So just notice how healthy that is. Like, this to me feels like a very compassionate confrontation, right? If you're finding it difficult to tolerate Isla's emotions, know that you can leave because I've got it.
Yeah.
You can choose to do that. If you choose to stay, I need you to support me.
Yeah.
When you do this, I feel this. I need this differently from you. What do you think mum will say if you have this conversation outside of the holiday, outside of the emotional disruption? If you have that conversation with her before you even fly out,
mm-hmm.
what would that look like? What do you think mum's response might be?
I think she'd probably be quite taken aback.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'd be I think she would probably like to try to be more supportive.
Right.
I think it's often that she doesn't know how, which is where my instinct of like just grow up, like I shouldn't have to explain this to you, kind of comes from.
So
then I suspect she'll go on the phone to my sister and be like, you'll never guess what your sister just told me. But that's maybe for another day.
Well, so what I notice is when you go into your healthy self, right, that if you're finding it difficult to tolerate Isla's emotions, go. I've got this. If you choose to stay, this is what I need from you. Yeah. Like, you can also open up to, oh, I think she wants to try, but she doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So if you gave her that clarity, this is what I need from you.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to be on my side.
Well, both of our sides, really.
Yeah.
I think it's that I want to make it when it happens, it feels very adversarial. And I'm like, this is not about, it's actually not a disagreement. It's just making space for everybody to feel however they feel.
Yeah.
Including Isla, who's four and doesn't really know how to do that right now.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like mum wants to try. She just doesn't know how. So she has a really, you know, she has a healthy adult self too. She's unpracticed at just taking care of her own emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being with other people's.
Yeah.
You get to kind of draw that out of her a little bit.
Yeah.
So, it sounds like having a conversation with mum in advance, maybe just saying, you know, I've been thinking about our holiday, I'm really looking forward to it, and this is the thing that I'm a little bit worried about, and this is what I need from you.
Yeah.
And does that, you know, how does that land for you, mum?
Yeah, and I think I laid some kind of potentially helpful groundwork to this when she came to stay with us over Christmas.
Right.
And the first day she arrived, I was like, okay, let's all go around. So my mum, me, my husband, Isla, and we did a like, what are the things that you want to do over the next 4 days that would make this a nice Christmas holiday for you? albeit she went, I don't mind, whatever you like is fine, and then clearly had opinions about that. But you know, it's like, I think sort of setting the, is like opened the door to the fact that my agenda is that we all have a nice time.
Yeah, yeah. And it might be that we need to add some more words to that. Like, what does nice time look like, right? Mm. It might be that it's about, what do you want to do today, Mum?
Mm-hmm.
This is what we want to do today.
Yeah.
Or, well, this is what Isla wants to do today.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't always have to hang out together.
Yeah. In fact, it's better when we don't always hang out together, because I need quite a bit of space.
Yeah. Yeah. So these, like this kind of boundary setting, notice how most of the work is actually in how am I, what's the situation, the scenario that's going on? How am I responding? And is mm-hmm. that the best way, or is there something else I could do to support me?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And it sounds really reasonable to just say, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, and it feels very, it feels really achievable as well, because previous iterations of conversations that I've imagined always end up in her in a big heap of like, I'm such a terrible parent. Oh, and I'm like, I don't really want to interact with that, thanks.
Yeah. It's like, well, you're choosing to make that mean that that's not what I meant. Like, actually, right, really staying in that healthy adult self. And assuming your mum has access to that too. Because mm-hmm. if she is, you know, getting into that place of just completely collapsing, mm-hmm. when she's got no access to her own kind of self-acceptance, that, oh, that's quite hard to hear. Can I be with that? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, we can coach around that too. It's like, you don't need to believe that. That's not what was intended. You're choosing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's coming to my mind is you may still end up with three toddlers, right? Like, it may be that mum forgets because, she'll mm-hmm. forget that conversation in the moment when it's happening, because this is such an ingrained shortcut, right? Mm-hmm. When someone else is having an emotion, this is how I respond. So it's like reinforcing this message, mum, you can go if you need to go. I've got this. Yeah. If you're choosing to stay, I just need you to just be there. You don't have to say anything. So you still end up managing the three toddlers, but you're doing it in a way that honors everybody's feelings without adding to the chaos.
Yeah, and I think it's like, then it feels like it's also taking care of my inner toddler, because she knows that she doesn't need to do anything in this situation because I've got it. Yeah. And actually, I think Isla probably will calm down more quickly when she's not getting an earful from her mum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or learn that she can maybe play you off against each other if she really tried.
There's that.
Yeah. How does that feel for you, Fiona?
Yeah, feels great. Looking forward to trying.
Yeah, amazing. Beautiful share. You're so welcome. I'll send those notes across to you as well after the call. So for folks watching, like, all we're doing there is just saying, well, what's on top for you, right? Like asking Fiona, what's on top for you, and then getting a sense in our own minds, where is this in the compass, and then what's the best way to approach that, like what's the way to support it. So knowing that she was in that place, and even Fiona was able to say, oh, you know, when I get in that place of trying to take care of everybody else, I'm in that martyr-y energy. So we come down to the warrior and we're like, okay, what could support Fiona here around this? And notice we didn't try to solve Fiona's relationship with her mother, right? We're just looking at specific instances, because it's in the specifics, right, in the very current alive issues, that when we support our clients to make different choices in those moments, it has a cascade effect. It's like, oh, new evidence, I can do this now, starts to shift that relationship. Helpful? Cool. Amazing. So what I'd really encourage you to do is to have that in mind as you're meeting with your practice quads. Have the compass in mind, knowing that we're always just going to the next resource around the compass to support the issue. And you can, you know, you can always make a different choice, right? It's just, that's a great way to just kind of start playing with. And the idea is you just give yourself some practice. There's a lot of tools in this module, but there's a sort of two or three for each of the compass points. But as you start playing with these, you'll notice that what they're there to do is to just elicit, you know, conversations with the client, allowing them to make different choices. Yeah. Any questions, feedback, clarifications? All sound all right. Groovy. Fiona, I'm excited for your holiday. I want to hear all about it. Amazing.
I'm excited too. I'm especially excited because we're going on another holiday tomorrow. So I'm like,
oh, amazing.
I'm holidayed up this year. I'm making up for the last 3 years.
I know the feeling. It's very fun. Cool. Well, that was great. Thanks so much for your company today, folks. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about you playing in this kind of realm with your clients on the discussion forum. Yeah. Okay, everyone. Have a great day. Thanks for your time. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.